Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Can you hear me in the back okay? Yeah? Great. So thank you for being here, not only at my session, but for coming to Redmond, for putting up with our weather, and for hanging out with us here on campus. We've been really excited to have you here, and I've been looking forward to this for a long, long time. Thank you for spending a week with us learning about technologies that we're building to make your lives better. My name is Brian Keller, and I'm a technical evangelist for Visual Studio, and my focus really is on application lifecycle management. And that's what this session is about. And so Visual Studio is about 15 years old now, give or take, as a brand. And so about 7 or 8 years ago, we recognized that we really wanted to get into helping you as a team come together to build great software, and a recognition that software programmers are great and your jobs are hopefully made better with Visual Studio, but we also wanted to tackle some of those challenges that you have when you start integrating with other people on the team that might be other programmers, they might be testers, they might be architects, they might be folks that are in operations. And so really that's what application lifecycle management is all about. And so this is a go fast session. This will mostly be an end-to-end walkthrough of my favorite capabilities that we've delivered in Visual Studio 2012, which is inclusive of Team Foundation Server 2012, all part of one big happy brand family. And so I will also give you some pointers to other sessions that go deeper that are happening over the next couple of days in some of the areas that we'll be looking at. And with any luck, we'll have time at the end for questions as well. So a lot of people ask me, what is Microsoft's ALM solution? And if I had one word to sum it up, it really is unified. That's what we're going after here. So quick show of hands, how many people use Team Foundation Server today? Wonderful. So you already know that Team Foundation Server was really built from the ground up, not just to provide source control. Of course, that's very important. But we also wanted to make sure you had these other artifacts included as well. So project management, work item tracking, testing, lab management. And then those are all enabled in the same system to allow you to trace across all those different artifacts and start to light up things like reports, or to be able to draw conclusions about why did someone check in this piece of code? Well, it's to fix this bug, and that bug was fixed in this particular build, which is happily in the hands of our customers. And so on top of that, of course, we have process. We have tooling integration for Visual Studio, as you would expect. We also have tooling integration for Eclipse with our companion product known as Team Explorer Everywhere. We also recently announced or released, I should say, a command line client for folks that like to use Git locally and then synchronize with TFS on the back end. So that's called Git TF. And one of my colleagues, Jamie Cool, will be showing that off later this week. I have the session code for you here in a few minutes. And so when I've been kind of going around the world talking to software development teams and looking at the trends that people are trying to solve today with application lifecycle management, the key theme I keep coming back to is this word continuous. You have to be continuously adapting feedback from your customers into your development plans. You have to be continuously integrating quality into everything you do. And then, of course, you need to be able to continuously deliver the software and the services that you're building over to your customers. And so throughout that, we've identified several pain points that we've tried to solve with this release of Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. And I'm going to spend some time taking a look at each phase of this life cycle by looking first at definition. So everything you do when you're thinking up an idea for a requirement you might build and starting to refine that with the business or the customers that you're working with. Then, of course, development, obviously very, very important. And then finally, delivery as well, because, of course, our job's not done the moment you build the software and hand it off to operations. We are, prone to getting those calls at 3 o'clock in the morning when something goes wrong. And so really, in this end-to-end demonstration, I'll show you something that hopefully helps you with each and every one of those areas. So if we take a look at the life cycle here, this is generic enough that I think it probably applies to any piece of software that you might build. You're going to start with some set of requirements. Those are going to go into a product backlog or a feature catalog that you might be working against. And then, of course, after you start to pop those requirements off, you're going to implement them, and then you're going to hand those off to operations, and operations will be monitoring them and then eventually asking for bug fixes and new features, whether that comes from ops or from higher ups in your business, other stakeholders, and so on. And so if we look at some of the problems that we were trying to address with the definition area, the first is just making sure that you understand the requirements that your team is set out to deliver upon. And we have this saying at Microsoft, we say, how often have you built what your customers asked for, but not really what they wanted? Now think about that for a minute. Software is really, really complex. It's increasingly difficult to convey exactly what you need, especially for these non-technical stakeholders, to try to communicate back to your development team. And so you may go off and do a sprint and then turn around and hand them a piece of software that really doesn't match exactly what they asked for, and that's not good for anybody. So there's a lot of data that suggests that if you are able to make a change to software early on in the kind of definition phase, it might cost you 1/10 of what it costs to make that same change later on once you've actually started to develop it. And so for the first time, we're actually investing in tools that can help you up front with kind of that definition and analysis. Then once you kind of have an idea of what it is that you want to build, of course your team needs to decide how do you manage all of these conflicting priorities and be able to break this down into a prioritized order that you can go execute against. Now, agile methodologies give us a lot of techniques for being able to manage work in that manner. And so in this release of Team Foundation Server, we've continued to increase our support for agile tooling, some of what you saw in the keynote this morning, around helping you break that work down into iterations. And I'll go a little bit deeper than what Jason did in the keynote demo this morning. So without further ado, let's switch over to some demos. I should mention this virtual machine is a virtual machine that I make available and publish for free. Anybody can download it. It's available on my blog. So if you go to blogs.msdn.com/BRIANKEL, you'll be able to download this. It's a Hyper-V virtual machine, and it comes pre-configured with Team Foundation Server sample data, users, projects, and so on. And so, you know, kind of, it's hard to wrap your head around Team Foundation Server if you just install it and you don't see any sample data. So that's what I've tried to do here, is make all of my demos available, including hands-on labs that you can go back and kind of bite off a specific feature or two over your lunch break and learn a little bit more. So the first thing that I'll show you is a tool that we built. It's a storyboarding add-in that installs right into PowerPoint. And the first question a lot of people ask me is, well, why did you pick PowerPoint as a storyboarding tool? And as it turns out, there's several really good reasons for this, the first of which is that PowerPoint already supports the notion of shapes and animations, so it's possible for me to get in here and model workflows as you go from one screen to another. The other great thing about this is that a lot of the stakeholders that we may work with probably don't have a copy of Visual Studio installed, but they probably have a copy of PowerPoint. And so if you send them this deck, they can open this up, they can kind of run it, they can give you feedback either over email or in a conference room setting. And so it makes a really good storyboarding tool, and this is actually something we use quite a bit at Microsoft and have for several years to do our storyboarding. So what we've done is we've added on top of PowerPoint with this storyboarding tab that gives you several features that are really relevant to storyboarding, and of course the first of which is this rich shapes library over here. So as you would imagine, we give you shapes for building Windows Store apps, for building Windows Phone apps, for building web apps, and then we also have an online gallery that you can click over to find more shapes online, and we're adding shapes all the time. In fact, last month we released a shapes pack for iOS, so if you need to get out there and model those storyboard shapes, you can do that. We also have the ability for you to work with shapes and then share them with other people. So what I'll do is I'll just create a new slide. I can select from any of the layouts that I've previously been working with. So here's a SharePoint layout, or I'll just go to my favorite Fabricam layout. And then what we can do is maybe if we're modeling an existing brownfield application, we might want to grab a screenshot from that application and pull that in. So I'll just grab a screen clipping. And then, of course, we want to add a shape. So I'll just add a simple shape. Now, I'm not going to take the time to make it look nice. I'm definitely not a designer. But if I did want to add my own custom styling to this and make it look exactly the way that our corporate UI standards mandated, I might want to do something like save that shape back to my library. And so that's quite simply done just by going to the storyboarding tab again, saying add to my shapes, and then giving that a name like the Fabricam button. I can also take these shapes, export them, share them with other people on my team that might want to reuse them in the future. And so we like this tool a lot. We hope you will as well. So if you install Visual Studio 2012 in the right edition combination, then you can get this, which works with Office 2007, 2010, as well as the new Office 2013 as well. So let's say that we've done our job kind of defining this piece of functionality that we want to build. Now we want to switch over to put this on the backlog and start scheduling it. This morning you saw Jason showing off our new Team Web Access interface. And so it has these live tiles. This is all customizable. I can change these shapes. I can bind them to things like a particular source control branch that I'm monitoring. Maybe I'm interested in a particular build definition or how many bugs I have coming into my project. I can also represent individual team members. And each team can have their own homepage and still be sharing the same Team Foundation server instance. So for example, within the developer division at Microsoft, we have a single Team Foundation server instance that gets used by anywhere between 1,000 to about 1,500 people on a given month. Well, I don't know about you, I don't work with that many people in a year, but I do work with my immediate feature team, maybe 10 or 12 people. And so I can represent this in here, and then we can each have our own sense of home for the particular project area that we care about. I can also start going into the backlog and adding new features to the backlog. Actually, it would help if I clicked on backlog. And so from here, I might want to add a new requirement. So as an admin, I should be able to edit employees. Now, I should mention I'm using a lot of terminology that's going to be immediately familiar to any team that's practicing Scrum, terms like product backlog and sprints. But you don't have to be practicing Scrum in order to use these tools. In fact, these tools will work with any of our out-of-the-box process templates. We ship three. One's a kind of generic agile process template, one's a Scrum process template, and one's a CMMI process template for folks that need to follow a little bit more formal process. But you can also adapt this tooling to work with your own custom process template as well. So that's very easy to do. I can turn on things like forecast lines here, as you saw Jason do this morning. And then as I'm dragging items up and down the backlog and kind of showing, based on this velocity, how quickly I'll be able to deliver certain features, I can have a conversation with the business stakeholders about this. And so if a particular feature needs to be delivered by the end of next month, then I can either move it higher on the priority so that that happens, or what I like to do is just ask for more resources. So if you double our team size, you can see the impact that that has on the team's velocity and the ability to deliver. So let's say that this particular feature, you had to deliver it yesterday, and so we'll do what you're not supposed to do in Scrum, which is add it to an existing iteration, and we'll move it over to Sprint 3. At this point, I'm working at the requirements level, but I now need to start breaking this work down into the individual tasks that a team will implement. And so, for example, we need to design this UI, and Annie is our designer, so we'll ask her to work on that. And then, of course, we need to dev the UI. Now, when I do this, notice there's an immediate impact on my team. So now Cameron and Annie are over capacity. Now, you might be wondering where those capacity numbers come from. On the capacity tab, this allows you to define on a per resource basis how much time each one of these individuals is working on your particular team project. Now, Annie is a shared designer resource, so she might be allocated for 3 hours a day on our project, and 3 hours per day on another project. Those can all be tracked independently. And of course, you can also get in here and model things like team holidays, or if Annie calls in sick, we can represent that here. And this is really designed to be visited on a daily basis. And so as you find new work that you need to work on, as you notice that team members maybe are sick or on vacation, you can come back to this plan on a daily basis, maybe during your daily stand-up meetings, and you can modify this to make sure that everybody's happy. And so, for example, at this point, my team's over capacity, and so what I might do is just take some of this work down here and then push this to a future iteration. Now everybody's happy again. So the next thing I'll do is actually switch over into the task board view, and this is your modern day implementation of Post-it notes on a whiteboard. A couple of nice things to point out here. I know you saw this in this morning's keynote. Obviously, I can drag and drop, as you would expect, to do state transitions. I can also tap the amount of work remaining and then just set that to say, hey, I've earned a couple of hours against this task. It's also all touch-enabled as well. So if you set up a touch screen in your team room, we do this a lot at Microsoft. It makes it really convenient for people, maybe when they're on their way to lunch, to say, oh, yeah, I closed this out, so let me go ahead and update the task board. And obviously, you know, Post-it notes are great, except if you're working remotely. And so the great thing about this, of course, is that you can just open it in any web browser and see at your desk exactly where everybody's at on the team. You can also pivot this by team members as well. And so I like this for stand-up meetings because it really gives us a nice format for being able to go from person to person and say, here's what I did yesterday, here's what I'm working on now, any impediments that might be in your way. And then, of course, as I burn this work down, it's updating my burn-down chart in real time. So that allows everybody to make sure that we're on track and we're trending to finishing the project by the end of our iteration. Now, my virtual machine is running the RTM version of Team Foundation Server 2012. Since we RTM'd, we've actually added a new capability that Jason showed this morning, which is a Kanban board. Is anybody out there practicing Kanban today? Great, a few of you. Okay. So Kanban actually is available already in the hosted Team Foundation service that you saw this morning. And so the Team Foundation service, which I've just switched to here, is really nice because since it's in the cloud, of course, we can make rapid updates to the service. And so we push out to the service about every 3 weeks. There's not always new features. Sometimes it's just maintenance work in the background. But quite often, we have really nice features that are showing up, like the Kanban support. And so if I look at this particular project, for example, when I switch over to my backlog, you'll notice that I also have this other board that I can switch to. And so this is like the task board, except at this level, you're really looking at the individual requirements, user stories, features, whatever you call them on your team. And the idea with Kanban, if you're not familiar with it, is it's really about analyzing the flow of value through your projects. It's a concept that originated in Japan, and the idea is that, let's say you're an auto manufacturer, it doesn't do you a lot of good to spend 3 months just building a lot of tires if at the end of the pipeline you're not actually producing any cars. And so with Kanban, you would take a look at the approach and make sure that you've got a continuous steady flow of all the individual car parts, and then on the other side you're actually producing cars and you're not overwhelming or underutilizing any part amongst that system. And so here you can see that I have a couple of work items that are new on my backlog. I have a few that are approved that maybe my team has started to do the additional business requirements analysis against. And then I have this work that's committed. And so if I try to take some of this work and assign it to committed, then I've actually set a threshold up here of a maximum of 4 committed work items at any given time. And so this is going to give me a warning that says, hey, you know, you're gonna kill our team if we try to do that. And so maybe let's back that off and put it back into an approved status. And then once they finish this work, of course, you can add new work to their plate. So that's Kanban. If you use the on-premises version of Team Foundation Server 2012, you will be able to take advantage of Kanban in a few weeks. We're actually getting ready to release what we call Team Foundation Server 2012 Update 1. And that will update your on-premises environment to include capabilities like Kanban and a few other things that I'll be talking about later on. Okay. So now let's switch gears. Let's say that we've been of course, working against our project for a while, and we're in the middle of a sprint. And now it's time to actually take a look at some of the productivity tools that we've added to Visual Studio that come in handy when you're working in a team. And so the first of those is a loss of focus. I won't ask you to raise your hands, but I'm sure all of us on a weekly basis probably get interrupted multiple times during the week, whether that's, you know, hey, everyone's going to lunch, or whether that's your manager that's asking you to fix a bug urgently. And this can be a big problem. Now, I don't have a solution for preventing you from getting interrupted, but what we do have is some new tooling within Visual Studio that can help you deal with those interactions and be able to jump back and forth from tasks very quickly. Another thing that we really want to bake in and continue to bake into Visual Studio is quality management tools. And so I'll show you some of the new testing tools that we have built into Visual Studio, as well as a new tool that I like called Code Clone Analysis. And then finally, we want to be able to circle back with the users, possibly mid-sprint, to make sure that we're still on track and delivering exactly what they want us to deliver. And so I'll show you some new tooling that we can use to help us with that. So if I switch over to Visual Studio here, you'll notice that I'm in the middle of writing some code. I have some breakpoints set. Maybe I have multiple windows open. If I had multiple monitors up here, as I'm sure most of us work with multiple monitors, then you get Visual Studio exactly how you want it, and then you start being productive at that point. And so let's say you got interrupted at this point. You need to go switch to something else. It's going to be a challenge to get back into this environment. And so what we've done is we've added a new capability, first of all, called My Work. So My Work really shows you all of the things that matter from Team Foundation Server to you. So down here at the bottom, we have a list of any requirements or any bug fixes that are on my plate. And up here at the top, we have a list of any of the work I'm currently working on. So I'm currently designing an implementation of a feature. And you'll notice this box that says suspend and shelve. When I click on suspend and shelve, the first thing it's going to do is save my file edits on Team Foundation Server as what's called a shelve set. So a shelve set is a nice way to back up with your changes without necessarily committing them to the mainline repository. But it also is going to take note of my specific environment within Visual Studio as well. So this includes breakpoints, it includes files that are open, it includes window positions across multiple monitors. And so now what you'll see over here is that I have this work that's in progress. I could have multiple shelves of work that are in progress. When I'm ready to come back and work on this, all I need to do is click on resume. It's going to rehydrate everything within my Visual Studio environment, and I'm ready to be productive again. So that's suspend and resume. Another really nice thing that I like about what the team's done in Solution Explorer is the ability to really easily filter your Solution Explorer either based on pending changes or open files. And so this is one of those features I only discovered recently. And basically, if you pivot by open files, this just shows you the files that you have open. And so sometimes as our solutions get more and more complex, that can become really helpful. The other thing that you may have noticed for those of you that are already using Visual Studio 2012 is we've merged the idea of the class view right into the Solution Explorer. So as I start expanding these .cs files, it's starting to expand those classes and the individual members of those classes and so on. The other thing that you'll notice for those of you that have Visual Studio Ultimate is that when you select one of these classes, I can generate a dependency graph straight within Visual Studio. Dependency graphs are a feature that we added in 2010. We've done a lot of work to make them much more performant and to remove the modality of this particular dialog. So the first time you do this, it's actually building a look-aside database. The next time you do this or any new classes that you might need to add to this, it's going to be much, much faster than it was in the past. So it's a really nice environment for being able to build up those dependency graphs and understand if I change this particular class, what are the other classes that I might need to go out and retest. So that's really nice to have as well. Now, let's go back to Solution Explorer. Because Source Control Explorer, because one of the things that a lot of people complain about with Visual Studio 2010 and earlier is that it's a challenge to work offline, number one. It's also a challenge to work with files from another program outside of Visual Studio. If for example, you have a bitmap that you need to open up in Photoshop and make changes to, and you go to save, you'll get that error that says these files are marked read-only, what would you like to do? And so in the past, you would have had to explicitly check out all those files before you can start working with them. Well, we've heard your feedback. We know that's a big source of pain. And so what we've done is we've implemented a change to the default model for version control. And the default is to now use what are called local workspaces. And local workspaces basically work just by comparing what's on your local file system with what's up on the server, as opposed to trying to tell the server exactly which files you're working on before you start working on them. And this makes it easier to work offline. It also makes it easier to work outside of Visual Studio. And so to show you just very quickly what that might look like, if I open up Explorer and take a look at one of these files, let's go look at the address file in Notepad, for example. I can just come in here and make a change to this regular expression, and I can save that. No need to explicitly check that out. I can create a new file if I want to. And then when I get done, I come back to Visual Studio and I move over to my pending changes window. It's just detected those changes. So there's the change to the address file. Now the new file actually shows up as an excluded change by default. We don't want you to accidentally add a bunch of files to version control unless that's what you really meant to do. In a similar vein, we also don't delete files or folders unless that's really what you meant to do. But in this case, this is exactly what I meant to do, so I'll just say promote, and now I'm good to go. And I can go ahead and check in those files if I want to. Now, I just made a change to a regular expression. I don't know about you, I'm terrible at writing regular expressions. And so I would like to have somebody else on my team take a look at this regular expression before I check it in. And so another thing we've done is we've baked code reviews right into Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server. And so if I come back to my pending changes, I can just request a code review. At this point, I can provide the name of as many people on my team as I want to take a look at this file, or maybe I just want the first person that opens this up to take a look at it. So if I type in a couple of people here, I can say, please review my regex. And the really nice thing about having this built into Visual Studio and Team Foundation Server is that you move away from those hallway conversations or those paired programming sessions where later, you may not remember, did we actually review this? Did we take the feedback from the senior developer before actually checking this in? And so it really allows you to move past that and be able to go back and audit later on and say, hey, this particular change that we're getting ready to roll out to a particular customer, did we actually have a senior developer take a look at it? And if so, did the junior developer follow their feedback? And so it's really helpful for being able to do that. And so now when I switch over to my friend Cameron's desktop, he likes to use the dark theme, which I guess is appropriate on Halloween. And when he switches over to my work, he'll notice that he has this code review request to look at. And so very easily, he'll be able to see that he's been asked to review it, as has Annie. So one thing he might want to do is actually go ahead and explicitly accept this code review. The nice thing about that is it just signals to Annie that Cameron's taking a look at it, and so maybe she wants to hold off on spending any time on this until he's finished. And so then he can take a look at this particular file, and we've finally improved the diffing tool in Visual Studio 2012 for the first time in like 10 years, I think. And so once this opens up, I don't know why it's not responding, there we go. Then you'll see side by side the files. Of course, you can still override this with your own diffing and comparison tool if you want to, but by default, I think the one built into Visual Studio is quite good now. And so it's really easy for me to see the difference between these two files. I can add a comment that says, you know, the regex looks good. I can even leave comments on specific lines or specific characters. And so I can just find that specific block of text and say, change this to postal code. Because zip code is a US-centric thing. We want to be a little bit more geographically sensitive. And so after I'm done at this point, I can go ahead and send and finish my code review. The other thing I want to point out before I do that is that for those of you that are using Visual Studio, you probably already found these provisional tabs. Provisional tabs are one of my favorite productivity features in Visual Studio. The idea is that when you're in the middle of a code review or you're in the middle of a debug session and you're stepping in, stepping over, stepping into, pretty soon you've got like 40 files open and you have to go buy just a widescreen monitor just to use Visual Studio. Well, that's gone away now because by default, when you're in the middle of a code review, when you're in the middle of doing a debug session, only the active file you're looking at is going to open up in this provisional tab. If you want, you can click that middle button there to promote it to a permanent tab. But by default, when I'm done with this code review, this is going to go away and clear up that real estate and let me be productive again. So I'm just going to go ahead and finish that. It's going to take me right back into Visual Studio to whatever I was working on before. So now when I come back to this, I've got my code review. I can see that Cameron responded to it. I can see any feedback that he left. If Annie got a chance to give feedback, all of that's captured right here in line as well. And this also gets stored as work items within Team Foundation Server. So later on, you can go back and trace and audit and make sure that you really did do what you said you were going to do with respect to responding to that feedback. I can also go ahead and close this review and just say it's complete, and that's going to take it off of Annie's plate so she won't spend any time on this. Now, at this point, I'm feeling pretty good about this, but of course, I really want to run my unit tests against this to make sure everything's working correctly. And so another thing that we've done in Visual Studio 2012 is we've really reinvented our unit testing experience right within Visual Studio. And so for those of you that use unit testing in Visual Studio, you know we have support for writing unit tests that work against managed code. We've now added a test adapter that works against native code as well, so you can write your tests in C++ if that's what you prefer to do. But we've also gone further than that, and we've really opened up the extensibility for our unit testing framework. And you can already download test adapters for free that allow you to run XUnit tests, in-unit tests. There's several JavaScript unit testing frameworks that now plug right into Visual Studio. You can also take those same testing frameworks and put them on your build server as well. And the way that works is after you install those testing frameworks and you run a build while you have the Test Explorer window open, we're just going to look across your entire solution for any files that match the file format that those individual test adapters understand how to run. And then you can run them all. You don't even need to care which types of tests are built into the project. And so that way, if you have some people on your team that prefer in-unit versus X-unit, or maybe you go grab an open source library that already has unit tests in a different framework, you can use them all right within your Visual Studio project. And so here you can see this is a test that failed. If I open this up, I think this is an X-unit test, sure enough. And then I think some of these others are just classic MS test, Visual Studio unit tests. The other thing that we've done here is we've shipped a new tool from Microsoft Research called Code Clone Analysis. Now, Code Clone Analysis is another tool that's designed to help you improve the quality of your code by focusing on code maintainability. I'm sure we've all been there where we take a snippet of code from one project and copy and paste that into another project because it does roughly what we need it to do, and then we make slight adjustments to it to fit our specific requirements in the other project, when in fact we knew all along we really want to go back and refactor this later and clean it up and make some kind of common methods that we want to reuse, but of course we never get around to it, and by the time we do, it's really impossible to find those original blocks of code. And so Code Clone Analysis is designed to help you with that. And so I can just click on Analyze Solution for Code Clones. This is going to look across my entire solution for any blocks of code that look like they're similar. Now, the threshold on this is we're not going to tell you every single time you initialize the variable x to 0. That would just be way too much noise. But instead, there's a fairly coarse-grained analysis going on at this phase to tell you if you have any blocks of code that look similar. And so here I have some code that looks similar. We'll go ahead and compare these files. And when I do, you'll notice that they're almost exactly the same, except the redirect action was different. So clearly what happened is somebody probably just changed one of these codes from one project to another, and they changed it to suit their needs. Another thing that I like about this in Solution Explorer is I can open up these individual files, and you'll notice that they have the same name, servicetickets controller.cs. And so previously I would have been really confused about where those files live within my solution. But notice we have this sync button up here. Sync will take you straight to the file within Solution Explorer to show you exactly which file you're looking at. So here I can see, thank you. Here I can see that one of these files is located in my extranet.web, and then of course the other is in some other project. Now, another usage for code clone analysis is to look at a more fine-grained selection of code to answer the question of, hey, you know, maybe this is the first time I'm working with a particular object. I would really like to know, do other developers on my team wrap this operation in try-catch finally, for example? So it's the first time I've worked with this particular object. And to help me answer that question, what I can do is just open up one of these controllers and... I think one of these guys has a good example which illustrates this. So if we take this insert or update followed by a save operation, I can right click after selecting just that block of code, and I can find matching clones based on that specific set of code. And this one's really interesting because it really highlights for you just kind of the magic that's going on behind the scenes when it comes to code clone analysis. Notice that up top I'm working with a customer repository and I'm doing a insert or update operation. And then notice the results I get back actually bring me back delete operations, employee repository. And so the technology that they built in Microsoft Research is actually really good at being able to look not just at the variable names themselves, but actually operating on the MSIL itself to try to determine if there's any code that looks like it's roughly similar to what you're working on, because that might be a flag that you want to dig into. So this is just a really nice tool for being able to do that. So at this point, let's say that I've built some code, I've built some functionality, and you know, I did a lot of work up front with the storyboarding to try to make sure that what my customers was asking for is what I actually went on to build. But I'm nearing the end of my sprint, and I'd really like to do another kind of, you know, gut check to make sure that my customer's happy with what I've built. Now, you can imagine the problem if you work with remote customers of trying to get their feedback and understand what they're telling you about the software that you've built. Imagine when you all go home and Microsoft has built some software. I really would love to have you all take a look at it and give us feedback, but it's not reasonable for me to be sitting in the same room as you, watching over your shoulder as you're using the software. So if that's an option for you, that's great. But the next best thing is to be able to actually extend that feedback reach right into your office and be able to take that data in a rich way and send it back into Team Foundation Server. So what we've done is we've actually built that right into TFS, and we allow you to now request feedback. So if I ask Cameron to give me feedback about a particular application, maybe I've put it on a staging server for him. And then down here, the last question you need to answer is basically what you're looking for feedback on. And so in this case, a lot of you probably do acceptance testing with your users prior to pushing it out to production. This is a great place to put those acceptance tests right into the tool. Or if you just have basic questions like at Microsoft, we have a lot of lawyers who need to sign off to make sure that our privacy requirements are listed on every web property. What I can do is just ask them, you know, does this meet your expectations? Send this request to them, and then they can give me that feedback. And so I'll say, does the employee page provide the right functionality, something like that. If I needed to provide more details about click here, then there, log in as this user, I could do that. And once I'm done, I basically preview an email that's going to be sent out to Cameron and anyone else that I'm asking feedback from. And so now when I switch over to Cameron's view again, he gets an email that looks something like this. And when he follows this link, it's going to launch what's called the feedback client. The feedback client is a tool that Cameron installed earlier. It's a free tool from Microsoft. It also does not require that Cameron have a Team Foundation Server client access license. So you can ask, you know, 1,000 people across your organization, hey, if you have feedback, install this tool and use it to send us rich feedback about what you think about the application. And so at this point, once I've navigated to that application, which I've got open already, then I say next, and at this point I'm ready to start sending rich information about how I use this software. Now, this is something Cameron has full control over. If he wants to, he can turn on screen recording with voice annotations. He can also just capture screenshots and kind of take some notes as he goes. And so he might look at this and say, you know, I love the new UI. And then when he clicks over to the employees page, because he's trying to provide feedback on the employees page, he might say, page load is too slow, something like that. There we go. And then he takes a look at this and says, you know, I'd really like to have an employee ID column in there. So let me grab a screen clipping. Let me open it up and annotate this to tell everyone exactly what I mean here. Let's add an employee ID column here. Please add employee ID. Other than that, I'll give it 4 stars. We'll submit this. It goes straight up to Team Foundation Server. He didn't even know that he's using Team Foundation Server in the background. It's all automatically captured and sent right over to the team. And so that's really nice for him to be able to use that. And then when I switch back over to my view as the product owner or as the business analyst working on the development team, when I refresh this guy, I'll have a new feedback request down here, or feedback response, I should say. And then there's the feedback that came straight from Cameron. Once again, this is a work item, so I can create a new requirement. I can create a bug. I can trace all this later on. So one question that you might need to answer later on is, you know, we're required to get 5 stakeholders to sign off on our application before we push to production. You can go back and you can run a query using Team Foundation Server that says, for any of our feedback requests, do any of them have a feedback response rate that's less than 5? You can drill into that. But it gets you out of tracking these as hallway conversations and email and really putting them directly in a more actionable format. So when I create a new requirement or bug based on this and the developer starts to pick it up, they'll see exactly what Cameron was saying in his own words, and there's less of a risk of a communication problem. So that's a feedback client. Okay? If you're interested in some of the developer productivity features that I showed you, including I mentioned earlier the GitTF integration that we have, which allows you to take a local Git repository and then synchronize that with Team Foundation Server, I would encourage you to go check out my friend Jamie Cool's session. He's delivering this session tomorrow over in Building 92, Nexus Normandy, at 12 o'clock. Another session that you might be interested in, a couple actually around software testing, especially unit testing. David Starr has a couple of really good sessions that go deep on, number one, how do you test untestable code like SharePoint? Or how do you test a system and fake it out about the system date and time? That's something that's traditionally very difficult to model within a unit testing environment. But we have a new technology called Visual Studio Fakes that lets you do that. And we have a really great story around testing things like SharePoint locally without necessarily having a full SharePoint farm to test against. And so David's going to be showing that. And then also we have a great unit testing story around unit testing Windows Store applications. So for those of you that are building Windows Store apps, you can check out David's other session on Friday. The last stanza I'm going to be talking about here is what's traditionally referred to as DevOps. So I mentioned earlier, you know, our job's not done as developers when we finish software. And this has never been more true, especially as we're trying to push to production more and more frequently. That's what our users are expecting. That's going to require that we work more closely with the operations team to make sure that when we're ready to push to production every week or every month, that we've really got a defined process in place that's repeatable, that's signed off on by the right teams, so that I can go from a change that's happening in my source control repository very, very quickly over to something that's running in a production environment. And the other challenge, of course, is that when things do go wrong in production, you don't oftentimes have the same set of tools that you need in order to diagnose those issues and understand exactly what's going on. I don't know about you, but most data centers will not allow you to install something like Visual Studio on the machine just to attach to a running process and understand what was happening on the machine. So we've thought about those things, and let me show you a few of the ways that we're addressing this. There's another session this week I'll mention that goes much deeper into this. But one of the first things that we've done with Visual Studio 2012 is we've taken the IntelliTrace collector that you may have used with Visual Studio 2010 in a dev or a test environment, and we've taken that and we've made it available for you to use in a production setting. And so here I have, let's pretend this is a production website. Everything's looking pretty good, although occasionally I get this error that's happening, and I did the right thing by wrapping this in a custom error message, but of course we don't have the helpful yellow screen of death that's telling us exactly what's going on behind the covers. And so I'd really like to understand that. And to do that, what I can do now is actually ask my operations folks to download an IntelliTrace collector that they can then put on a USB key if they want to, walk over to the production machine, run a series of PowerShell commands, which allow you to start collecting IntelliTrace information off of that machine. So I'm not going to bore you with all the commands. For any person that knows PowerShell, they're very easy to follow. You're basically importing the set of commandlets. You're starting IntelliTrace collection against that particular application pool. Once you've reproed the issue, then you will have a log file, and you can either stop collecting or you can resume collecting, but take a checkpoint of that file that you can then import into Visual Studio. So again, you take that file, maybe you put it back on a USB key, you sneaker net it over to your Visual Studio environment, and when you open that up, it's going to show you, just like as if you're debugging the application locally, exactly what was taking place within that application's call stack. So for those of you that are maybe new to IntelliTrace, IntelliTrace allows you to go back in time and look historically at exactly what was happening within your application. And so here, once we open up the IntelliTrace file, you'll be able to see all the individual web requests that I received during that particular session while we were collecting IntelliTrace data. We can see all of the exceptions that were taking place. I can even double click on one of these exceptions, and it's going to take me straight to the line of code that was being run when this exception was thrown. Now, in order for this to work, you need to make sure that you're archiving your source and symbols for the builds that you're handing off to production or sending off to your customers. By archiving those source and symbols, we can take the IntelliTrace files and we can then map them back to the appropriate version of source code that's within your TFS repository. So if I take a look at this, for example, this particular line of code, I can see that we had a null reference exception. Very quickly, I can see exactly which variable was set to null. If I wanted to, I could then spend the time to diagnose this and go back in time through all of my IntelliTrace events. So remember, this happened on another production server somewhere, but it's like I'm debugging locally and being able to see exactly what was taking place. So IntelliTrace allows you to capture, you know, every ADO.NET call that you make, for example. And here I can even debug and understand exactly what was that ADO.NET call that was being made. And so maybe the reason I have a null reference is because my select statement is wrong. Maybe it's because I tried to read from a file that I couldn't get access to, and that's the reason that it's set to null. Any number of things that could be happening, but this gives you the tools that you can use at your fingertips. Okay? So if that's interesting to you, I would definitely encourage you to go take a look at Jamie's session, which is, Larry's session. It's 3007, which is great because he has all sorts of top secret spy tools that you can use to look at data running in production. And so that session is taking place tomorrow. The other thing that he's going to be focused on is the integration that we have with our friends over in the System Center team as well. So for those of you that are using System Center Operations Manager, you can actually start to collect this IntelliTrace information automatically or on demand. So instead of having to drop into PowerShell, you can just right-click and say, let's start capturing that information. The other thing you can do is you can wire up System Center 2012 to Team Foundation Server 2012. And so Larry will describe how that works. And the idea with that is that as someone in operations starts to encounter issues, they might do a first pass at those issues and realize that they need to file a bug for the application support team, right-click that issue, create an incident in Team Foundation Server, and then you as a developer, when you open that up, already have at your fingertips the rich analytics that System Center knows about the application so that you can more quickly understand what was happening, fix the issue, and then when you resolve it in Team Foundation Server, that's going to resolve the same incident running in System Center Operations Manager. So it's a really cool piece of functionality. Now, that was only half of the DevOps solution that I promised you. The other half, of course, is how do you go from dev test and be able to push issues quickly into production? And we have several stories for that. One of those is the on-premises solution that we have with Team Foundation Server 2012 and a solution we call Lab Management. I don't have time to show you a demonstration of that today, but I will quickly describe. Lab Management allows you to architect a build, deploy, test workflow so that if you check in code, or maybe every night you want to trigger a build to run, spin up a set of virtual environments, where we now support physical environments as well. If your build compiles successfully, and maybe your unit tests pass, the next thing you might want to do is actually deploy that out to your environment, and then run things like UI tests against that environment, or load tests against that environment. And Lab Management allows you to do that in a very prescriptive and repeatable way. And a lot of teams that I'm working with are starting to use that for production deployments as well. In fact, we just published a case study that talks about how the Xbox team and the Hadoop team are using Lab Management to go straight from dev test and then push over to production as well. And so Xbox has a really great solution. They can make a change to the way that achievements or leaderboards work, and then a few minutes later they can see that running in a staging environment. They can run all their automated tests right against that environment. Their manual testers can fire up their manual dev kits and start testing against that just as if it was the real Xbox production service. And then once they have confidence in that particular build, they can use that same workflow if they want to push it out to production. So it's a really nice tool for being able to do that. Now, in this morning's keynote, we also showed very quickly the way that you can go from the Team Foundation service running in the cloud and use that to push straight out into production. This works with either Azure websites or cloud services as well. And so here you can see a couple of different builds that I have. This is taking advantage of our hosted build server in the background, so I don't have to invest in any infrastructure to enable this. This is all run by Microsoft in the cloud for you. And I can easily right-click on one of these. I can queue a build. So that's my continuous integration build. And let's say that I felt confident that that was a build that was worthy to go to production. The next thing I can do is just right-click and queue a build for my continuous deployment. And then that gets pushed over to Azure. And so for those of you that are working with Azure, you'll notice a link that allows you to link up your Azure website and cloud services to either Git or TFS. And when you do that for TFS, what we do is we actually modify a build definition for you in your Team Foundation service project that then allows you to take your project straight from Team Foundation service, and the hooks are already provided for you to push straight out to Azure. Now, of course, you can push that out to a staging environment and then decide to VIP switch that later on. You've got a lot of options. I don't mean to say that you always have to push straight to production, but the workflow is there if you want to. So I wanted to just conclude by spending a few minutes talking more about the announcement that you heard this morning around Team Foundation Service. A year ago at Build, we launched the Team Foundation Service into preview, and we've done a lot of work on the service since then based on a lot of customer feedback and new features that we wanted to add. And so the Team Foundation Service, as of today, is officially released out of preview. Along with that, we are also saying that teams of up to 5 people will be able to use the service for free forever. We are also saying that it's going to be included as an MSDN subscription benefit as well. So for those of you that are on teams that are larger than 5 people, if you have the requisite MSDN subscription, then you'll be able to use that forever as well. And so we're basically making that available to anyone with Ultimate, Premium, or Test Professional with MSDN to be able to use that forever. And thank you. Now, some of the fine print on this, the build service is still in preview, so once we officially RTM the build service, not every plan is going to have unlimited build service access, but we expect we'll give you enough that based on the size of the team you're using, it should be plenty for you to work with. And then any plans beyond this, like if you have a team of 100 people, you can continue using the service for free until 2013. We expect in 2013 we'll make some more announcements around additional pricing plans that you can decide to opt into, or if you wanted to take your data, move that somewhere else, it's your data. We just want to provide that service for you. The next thing that I'll just quickly cover is the differences between Team Foundation Server and Team Foundation Service. Some of these are just a short-term limitation. We're obviously building on the service. More and more every month. A few of the limitations here are that you can't use things like the federated identity management, like Active Directory. So if it's a requirement for you to make sure that if you terminate an employee, for example, and their Active Directory access goes away, you want to automatically have that terminate in the cloud. That's something we expect we'll be able to enable in the future, but currently we're using Microsoft Accounts, formerly LiveID, for all of the authentication. Another thing that's a limitation is the customization of process templates in the cloud. Again, that's something that we think that we'll be able to open up in the short term, but today you are limited to the 3 out-of-the-box process templates that we ship for you. So just some limitations to keep in mind as you're considering the service, but I have a lot of customers that I work with around the world who have been using the service for quite some time and are very happy with it. So we see this as just another way to get that Team Foundation functionality, and everything that I showed you today will work with Team Foundation Service in the cloud. And I think, the one last thing I wanted to say is the continuous value updates that we're adding. So the continuous value delivery that we have isn't just limited to Team Foundation Service. We also have a new update that's coming out for Visual Studio and for Team Foundation Server running on-premises as well. And with this update, you'll see things like the Kanban support added, a lot of really nice fit and finish features that's going across the client and the server as well. So that's something that's in CTP4 right now. I think they're sometimes calling it a release candidate. The idea is that you can go grab that today and start playing with it, and then the final release of that will be made by the end of this calendar year. And then finally, you can go to tfs.visualstudio.com and you can sign up today for your own Team Foundation Service account. One thing, just a tip there, is make sure that you are you like the URL that you sign up for. The number one support request that we get against the service is not, you know, hey, I lost my connection. It's not anything like that. The number one support request we have is, hey, I need to change my URL because I picked a name that I don't really like. And unfortunately, today we have to delete your account and recreate it. So just a tip for you, make sure you create an account name that you like there. I've written a couple of books, and thank you very much for coming to the session. I will. Thank you. I have about five minutes if we want to do questions. One there. That's a great question. So which editions is the IntelliTrace features supported in? To analyze the data, you will have to have Visual Studio Ultimate. However, the good news there is that to collect the data, that's free. Anybody in the world can collect it. In fact, a scenario for an ISV might be, you know, I got a call from my customer, they're having problems with this issue. Let me have them download the IntelliTrace collector for free, package up that IntelliTrace file, ship it over to my FTP site, and I'll take a look at it. So yes, thank you for asking that. Yes? Are you talking about the code review? Oh, yes. It's there. I couldn't tell you exactly where it's at. But yeah, I think if you click, if you scroll down and look underneath that specific file that I left the comment on, then it would say there's a comment, you know, change this to postal code, line 13 or whatever. And if you click on that,
it'll link into the file you're not looking
for. It will. Yeah, it will. Yes. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that just one per team project, or how do you do multiple projects?
Yeah, great question. So he's saying that they want to try to segment their work by team and have different product backlogs. And sure, by logical business project as opposed to team project. Right. And yes, you absolutely can do that. So when you create a team, let's say the 5 of us are going to join a team, you add all the members to that team, you define which area path within your Team Foundation Server work items that team is working against, and which iterations they subscribe to. And that combination, that unique combination, basically produces a backlog that the 5 of us can work on. Yes, that's a great question. Yes, here. So the process template I was using today was the Scrum process template. So you saw product backlog item, bugs, sprints. If I was to use the Agile process template, then those would be called iterations and I can't even remember all the terminology. But yeah, the terminology will be different, but all the tools that I showed you would work regardless of which process template you're using.
Is there a migration path from the MSF Agile to the new Scrum template?
So is there a migration path from the MSF Agile to the Scrum process template or to the newest MSF Agile? Got it. So no, there's not a great migration path other than you can just get in there and do a bulk copy of work items within Excel. What I like to tell people when it comes to migration is that most of the time, if you can keep your old project data up somewhere and then start at some inflection point, maybe we're starting a new sprint, and then start using that new data moving forward, it's going to be a lot easier. I know sometimes you have to go through migration exercises. We can maybe take that offline and I can share some other tips because they really vary wildly based on where you're coming from and where you're going to. But anytime you can kind of do that you know, cut and release and go to the next version, that's going to be a lot easier. Yeah. So will any of the tools that I showed work if you're not using TFS for source control? Code clone will work. Unit testing will work. I think everything else that I showed you is specific to TFS. But what I will say is that you don't have to be using the full stack of TFS functionality in order to use some of this functionality. So for example, let's say you're using GitHub for your source control and kind of your work tracking, but you like the feedback feature that I showed. You can sign up for a Team Foundation service account. You can start adding people that you want to get feedback from. And you can use that as kind of your feedback repository. You don't have to use it for everything that I'm showing. So hopefully that gives you an area that you can start carving out. Oh, it can be premise-based as well, yep, of course. So yes, you can use the on-premises version. With feedback, it's nicer to be using the cloud in most cases if you have external stakeholders, because that way you can just add them by live ID as opposed to having to extranet enable your Team Foundation server instance and add, you know, accounts specifically for those users. But yes, absolutely, you can do the same thing using on-premises. Yeah. Can we keep going? I know that you guys need to cut back to channel 9. 5 minutes. Okay, and then I'll stick around in the hallway for other folks. There's one in the very back. So can you use the unit testing tool to test Silverlight? Gosh, David's going to be the better person to answer that. I haven't written Silverlight for quite some time, sorry. Yeah, so if you go to David Starr's session tomorrow or Friday, he can address that for you. Who else? Yes. Yeah, employee time tracking. So what do you use today for employee time tracking? You use SharePoint. Okay. So employee time tracking, I've seen a lot of customers use Project Server for doing time tracking, and we do have integration between Team Foundation Server 2012 and Project Server so that you can do your kind of time tracking and reporting all in one place. Everything that you do on-premises to Team Foundation Server 2012 is stored into a data warehouse that you can then write reports against. So you can write reports, but we don't have any out-of-the-box reports that do a great job of that today, but I've seen people do it. I've also seen people just use TFS and add a custom field per requirement that they have their employees go in and add time tracking. There's also a few add-ons that plug into TFS and advertise that they do time tracking. I haven't used them myself, but if you go to, I think it's visualstudiowidgets.com, my friend Richard Hundhausen provides a very long list of team system plugins, and I believe that one of those is a time tracking tool, or maybe a few of them. Oh, yes, I didn't show that, but yes, you can absolutely use the hierarchy to create, you know, epics and extend those user stories across multiple devices if you want to. Basically, in order to do that, if I have my demo machine still live here, you would basically just come into your backlog, and from your backlog, if I wanted to make one of these a child, can we get my screen back, my demo screen? No? Okay. Well, basically, you click on the number in the product backlog column. You drag that to another number, and that will return it. Yeah. Can you have your own plugins into the web portal? Not today. That's something that the team is working on, but it's I would say not in the short term. It's on our backlog. There's a lot of really interesting ideas that the folks have had for that. So yes, in the future, that would be an extensibility model you could want to use. OAuth support against Team Foundation Server. I see. That's a great question for an identity expert. I don't know if you would be able to use OAuth to connect to maybe ACS running in Azure and then authenticate that and map it to a local Active Directory account, for example. We within Team Foundation Server, we expect Active Directory, so I'd imagine you would have to pair those somehow. But I'm sorry, I'm not the right person to ask that. In the future, Team Foundation Service has the ability to expand to other identity providers. Right now, we just use Microsoft accounts, Live IDs. But yes, that's something that in the future, if you want to use external contractors that want to use their Twitter account, we definitely want to enable that scenario.